Picture London in the 1890s, buried under a crisis no one saw coming, horse manure. With each horse producing 35 pounds daily, the city faced an existential threat. Experts predicted New York would be buried to third-story windows by the 1930s. Then the combustion engine arrived, and horses vanished almost overnight. Today, we face a parallel moment, except this time, we're the horses. The difference? Horses didn't write books about their obsolescence or debate policy solutions. We do, and that makes our predicament both more complex and more urgent. Technology has always disrupted work, but what's coming isn't just another industrial shift. It's a fundamental questioning of humanity's economic purpose. For 300,000 years, human economic life barely changed. Then, starting in 1760s Britain, growth exploded. Per-person production increased 13-fold, world output nearly 300-fold. Yet prosperity sparked immediate resistance. James Hargreaves watched neighbors destroy his spinning jenny. John Kay escaped an angry mob. Queen Elizabeth I rejected the knitting machine patent, fearing it would create beggars. These weren't irrational fears. During the Industrial Revolution, real wages rose just 4% over 60 years, while food costs soared and life expectancy fell. The Luddites had legitimate grievances. Two forces battled. The substituting force replaced humans with machines, while the complementing force made remaining human work more valuable. For two centuries, the complementing force won. That era, the age of labor, is ending, and we're unprepared. Ancient myths imagined intelligent machines, Homer's driverless stools, Jewish golems. But serious attempts began in 1956 when Dartmouth researchers coined artificial intelligence and predicted breakthrough progress in one summer. They failed spectacularly. For decades, AI researchers tried mimicking human intelligence, replicating brain structure and coding expert rules. By the late 1980s, funding dried up and an AI winter descended. Then came 1997. IBM's Deep Blue defeated chess champion Garry Kasparov not by thinking like a grandmaster, but by evaluating 330 million moves per second through brute computational force. This marked a philosophical shift from purism to pragmatism. Modern AI doesn't copy human intelligence. It solves problems differently, often better. Translation systems analyze millions of texts rather than understanding language. Image recognition surpassed human accuracy by 2015, reaching 98% by 2017. AlphaGo Zero taught itself in 3 days without human guidance. This mirrors Darwin's insight. Capabilities emerge not through intelligent design, but bottom-up processes requiring only variation, selection, and inheritance. Today's most powerful AI systems similarly emerge from blind processes bearing no resemblance to human thought. Machines steadily absorb tasks once exclusively human across manual, cognitive, and affective domains. Agriculture now features driverless tractors and robotic harvesters. Some operations run without humans entering fields. SAM 100, a bricklaying robot, places 3,000 bricks in 8 hours versus a human's 300 to 600. JP Morgan's system reviews commercial loan agreements in seconds rather than 360,000 lawyer hours. AI predicts Supreme Court decisions with 70% accuracy versus human experts' 60%. DeepMind diagnoses eye diseases with 5.5% error rate, outperforming most clinical experts. Even emotional intelligence falls to machines. AI analyzes facial expressions, distinguishes genuine from fake smiles better than humans, and detects lies with 90% accuracy compared to our 54%. What makes this inexorable isn't just improving capability, but plummeting cost. Processing power costs fell by 10 billion times in 50 years. Trends this powerful eventually reach every corner of economic life. When Keynes coined technological unemployment 90 years ago, he predicted we'd hear a great deal about it. The reality proves more nuanced than simple job loss. Consider working-age American men, 1 in 6 now out of work, more than double the 1940 rate. Despite the economy quadrupling since 1950, three distinct frictions prevent displaced workers from reaching available positions. First, skills mismatch. Labor markets have polarized into high-paid skilled work, low-paid work, and a hollowing middle. Postgraduate degree holders see wages soar while bachelor's holders stagnate. Second, identity mismatch. Many refuse downward movement. In South Korea, 70% of young people hold degrees, yet half the unemployed are college graduates unwilling to accept poorly paid roles. American male manufacturing workers reject teaching and nursing jobs, despite these sectors creating the most new positions. Third, geographical mismatch. Work exists, but in the wrong location. From 2000 to 2010, Detroit and Cleveland lost up to 25% of their population, while Silicon Valley experienced stratospheric growth. Beyond these frictions lies structural technological unemployment, where machines absorb more tasks than new jobs emerge. Economic inequality has always existed, but technology is transforming it into something unprecedented. While critics claim the problem with capitalism is that not everyone has capital, this overlooks human capital, the skills and talents people develop. Unlike stocks or real estate, human capital cannot be traded separately from its owner. Technological unemployment occurs when someone's human capital loses all market value. In a world with less work, those owning the systems and machines that displaced workers will prosper, while those without valuable capital will have virtually nothing. Since 1980, income growth in the United States has stagnated for lower earners while soaring for the top 1%, whose income share has nearly doubled. The top 0.01's wage income share has more than tripled since 1970. For much of the 20th century, about two-thirds of economic output went to workers and one-third to capital owners. Since the 1980s, this balance has shifted. As productivity rose 30% since 1995, pay increased only 16%. This matters profoundly because capital income is distributed even more unequally than labor income. In the United States, the poorest 50% own just 2% of national wealth, while the richest 1% now own over 40%, up from 25% in the late 1970s. Technological progress is the primary driver making economies more prosperous, yet more unequal. The great economic dispute of the last century, state versus market control, is over. Central planning failed. The new question is distribution. How do we ensure everyone gets a slice when machines bake the entire pie? The big state must tax workers whose human capital appreciates, capital owners whose assets grow, and superstar firms generating healthy profits while employing fewer workers. Conditional basic income, available to those contributing through caregiving, cultural activities, or teaching, better addresses distribution and social solidarity than universal basic income. Citizens' wealth funds could share capital by acquiring company stakes on behalf of citizens, while systematic oversight constrains big tech's political power. Most profoundly, we face a meaning crisis. Economics textbooks treat work as unpleasant activity done purely for income, yet Freud considered it indispensable for harmonious living. Marie Chahota's 1930s study of unemployed Marienthal revealed that without structure, leisure became a tragic gift. People drifted into undisciplined emptiness. We need deliberate leisure policies, education teaching flourishing, and perhaps job guarantee programs for those craving work's meaning. As economic identities diminish, people will seek non-economic identities elsewhere. The big state must become a meaning-creating state, guiding what fills the purpose gap left by diminishing work. In a world racing toward automation, we stand at a crossroads between dystopian inequality and shared prosperity. The choice isn't between embracing or resisting technology, but between thoughtful preparation and blind stumbling into a future where work no longer anchors human existence.